welcome to Recovery Uncovered. I'm your host, Cass, and this week we have Iman with us. She is new to the self-help and peer support team, but has a lot of experience with mental health and mental illness in general. So let's just jump right in. Iman, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Thanks, Cass, so much for having me, first of all. I feel like I learn so much from podcasts, especially around the topic of mental health. So I'm really grateful that you asked me to be on here today and have a chat with you. A little bit about myself. I'm an artist. It's always kind of hard to start with that, but I feel like, you know, the first thing that comes to mind whenever someone asks me that question is, yeah, I'm an artist. I used to dance professionally for many years. Struggled with my own mental health as a result of a traumatic childhood. And a parent suffering from mental illness and another suffering from alcohol addiction. So growing up in a home like that, with undiagnosed and misdiagnosed mental illness that my mom was suffering from, along with the cultural barriers, I come from a South Asian background, immigration, all of those layers, it was quite difficult for my parents. And I think they were just coping the best way that they could. But that definitely, yeah, resulted in my own mental health struggles as an adult, you know, suffering from anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress disorder. Those are the things that I've been diagnosed with. I think when I first got my diagnosis, I was still, you know, very much, I was performing and keeping myself really busy in a very unhealthy way. And it wasn't until I was, you know, forced, I had a mental health breakdown. I had a nervous breakdown and I had to take a leave from work at the time. That's when, you know, I got the diagnosis from a doctor in a hospital and I was like, okay, I can really start to relate and understand what my mom's been going through, what my father's been going through. So at that time I shifted careers. I decided to go into mental health. I first started as a volunteer. And then slowly, you know, just the urge to learn more about mental health and what exactly it is and how it affects every aspect of your life. I took on more training, more, you know, just more education around it. I didn't go to school for mental health. I went to school for hospitality management, actually. But I was really able to, you know, through the workshops and the different trainings that I received as a volunteer, I was able to move my way up. And here I am, like a decade later, in an incredible role at CMHA as an entrepreneurship facilitator.
Yeah, you know, we've kind of got the same story. I started out as a volunteer too and, you know, worked my way up by telling the staff that Keely needs to hire me. So I just told them over and over again until she finally got it and she hired me. But yeah, no, it sounds like a lot has brought you to this part in your life. I want to go back to when you talked about dance. You talked about how dance, you know, it was a great thing for you, but it was also a tough thing for you. What was it that made it not as healthy as people would assume?
I think for you know, my dance career really started as a way to escape what was going on at home. So I think, you know, first, that was probably my first unhealthy relationship with it, but it was also, you know, the only way I could cope at the time because I really didn't know what was going on at home. So then, you know, eventually, I think when I started to make it a business and it became like a career, a way I could, you know, make some income as well, we were living in a, you know, we were living in poverty and a lot of struggles. My mom was on welfare, and it was just like an extra source of income. So any opportunity I would get, I would go for it, and everything else would struggle. So school would struggle. You know, that was when I was in high school. I would struggle with my grades because I was always looking for something to keep me busy and also something that I could do to contribute to the home, the chaotic home environment. You know, maybe this will make things better. So as I got older and then I like left home and was like, okay, let me pursue dance as a full-time career. I just very unhealthy in the sense that I was working like pretty much 24 hours a day. Like I was always, either I was, you know, getting myself booked for the next gig, or I was out late at night, you mm-hmm. know, not resting my body. And as a result of, you know, all of that came my mental health breakdown, because I was just, you know, I was drinking, I was doing all sorts of things that were unhealthy for my body, and ignoring, mm-hmm. really, right? Like ignoring like the real thing that was happening, which was just like running on this anxious feeling of like, got to keep everything together because it's going to fall apart like it has at home with mom and dad. And I don't want to be like that. And if I just keep myself busy in unhealthy ways and not rest my mind, my body, and engage in unhealthy situations, risky behavior, you know, everything will be fine. But as a result, you know, like we know with mental health, all of those things catch up with you.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it sounds like you were trying to kind of avoid things that were going on. Like, dancing became kind of that area where you could escape, right?
Yeah.
But unfortunately, you know, when you do that and you escape to something else, it tends to just add to the stress. And then the stress, like you said, builds up. So what is it that gave you the drive to keep going?
I think, you know, dance definitely has a big part of that. Having a creative outlet and developing an understanding, like shifting careers and going into mental health, and then learning about my mom's diagnosis and wanting to give back, wanting to when I started to get better, right? When I started to, you know, I found a great therapist. I was lucky enough to find a great therapist, and that doesn't happen for a lot of people. It's a very long journey, and you know, you go through so many different forms of navigating through the system, which is pretty broken, we know, at
yes,
times, as
yeah.
people, right? But I don't know. I had this like, I was lucky enough, I was blessed that I had this really great support network of friends. First I can say, that really picked me up when I was down, and I think then just the drive to really give, like, understand and help other people. That's always just been a big part of my nature. I don't know if it's like the middle child syndrome of like, you know, always trying to keep everything together.
I'm a middle child too. I get it.
Right? I feel like we take on like the older ones doing their thing and the little ones doing their thing, and you kind of, like, a lot just falls on you, right? Mm-hmm. You're like not the oldest, not the youngest. So I think I took that into my learning of mental health too, and just saying like, okay, if I can be at a level of like functioning with this mental health diagnosis, now what? Now I want to help others. Okay, if I've found this way and I'm seeing other people, especially in my community, in the South Asian community, falling apart, mm-hmm. You know, like my mom misdiagnosed, and then, you know, getting seeing it from a different lens, once you finally understand, okay, you know, oh, she's experiencing mental health too, he's experiencing mental, that when you can actually like look at them and say, not label them, but actually like in a human way, treat them in a humane mm-hmm. way, and say they're not doing this or saying this because they're evil or they're a bad person, or, you know, whatever the things that society and movies and, you know, the culture has put on mental illness and made us think that that's mental illness. My understanding of mental health helped me clear all of those negative connotations around it. And I really was just determined since then to help bring that understanding not only to my community, but to a larger, you know, platform as much as I can. And I think by working in the system, you can start to, you know, make some change happen, you know, like, you know, be the change you want to be, I guess, mm-hmm. you know, like, so cliche, but it's so true. If you want to make a change, like, don't hate on the system. Yes, we know the system's broken and it has so many, you know, areas that it can improve on. But if you want to make a difference, then go into the system, do something, right?
Yeah. And, yeah. you know, often people say that, you know, awareness is the key. And it sounds like, you know, once you became aware that, you know, you also suffered, and aware of what your mom suffered from and your dad, it kind of gave you that boost to find the education and learn more about it. And once you learn more about it, it's easier to see the person and not the disease, right? Often people see the disease as the person, and it's not the same. They're two different things.
And empathy, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I think a lot of us as folks that have experienced mental health, we have to start from our own healing. This is the yogi meditator in me speaking, but like our healing has to start with being compassionate to ourselves first, being empathetic towards ourselves. And if I can't be compassionate and empathetic to myself, then how am I going to be compassionate and empathetic to anybody else? You know,
mm-hmm.
if you can't be that way for you, then you can't, if you can't be the change, then you can't affect change. It's all like, you know what I mean? It all goes hand in hand. So I think we're very, us folks who are dealing with this have learned to be very empathetic towards ourselves. And that's why we can be so kind and not dehumanize other people, because we've felt that dehumanizing, that stigma from people themselves so deeply.
Oh yeah, for sure. So what is it that you were able to do to get that empathy for yourself? Like how are you able to radically accept the fact that you have a mental illness? This is what life is going to be like. This is what I need to do to keep myself healthy. Because there's still, you know, even in 2020, there's still a huge stigma when it comes to mental health and mental illness, as well as substance use. So, you know, a lot of people still really struggle with that, like that self-esteem part, the part that you matter. So let's keep going and getting you better because you matter. How did that happen for you?
I think, like, first coming from a South Asian background, like, yoga has always been a big part of my life, my meditation and yoga, because it's from really, yoga was, you know, the birthplace is India. So it was something that I had already, like, been exposed to in my life. And I think I just, when I had my breakdown, I really gravitated towards movement again. I knew I couldn't get up on stage and dance at that time and do all of the normal things that I was doing as a performer. So I found another outlet, which was yoga, mm-hmm. and that's meditation through movement. And, you know, I went deep into a yogic practice and, you know, went into some courses to do meditation. And I think that sitting in stillness, being alone a lot, right? Because even as much as I can say, like, I had a lot of people that supported me, but as I've gotten older, a lot of those people aren't around,
right.
You know, like people, you know, family members, you know, we all are at different stages in our lives, you know, they have children, they move on. I haven't had children and I'm at a different stage in my life. So it's like, I always have to go back to that, you know, that practice and that, that state of mind where it's like, it's me in the end. It's, I have to sit here and be comfortable with me and, accept who I am and be kind to myself again. I know I'm just kind of maybe repeating myself around that, but it's really that, like, those hard days are there every day, mm-hmm. as we know. You know, some days are good, some days are bad. A lot of bad days are the ones where I have to, like, pick up and call the crisis line because I don't want to call a friend, you know? I don't want to be that friend that's always calling in a crisis, you know? Because this has been going on for so long with me that I feel like, not that I'm, like, you know, being unkind to myself, but you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I have to find other ways to help myself and still maintain those relationships as well. And also accept that I'm not going to be everyone's, you know, cup of tea,
right.
with my struggles and my challenges. So, you know, if they're not your people, then move on, you mm-hmm. know, and accept that it's just not their journey to take with you. This is your journey, and your journey is going to take different phases. And, you know, some will stay, some will go. And, you know, when they go, we make room for others to come in, mm-hmm. which is really beautiful, right?
Yes, for sure. And yes. I understand that. And, you know, I was going to bring up the fact that, no, I don't have many friends right now. And that's because growing up, I got bullied so much. And then, you know, with my mental illness and everything, people just kind of dropped away. And then when I attempted suicide, I really lost everybody. So, I struggle a bit with finding friends. I get nervous when I'm around people because I think, like, oh, I'm just going to say something that pushes them away. And so what was it like for you to navigate through these friends that you know, possibly weren't going to be the best support for you?
That's so intimate for you to share with me and to share on your podcast here too. I feel like, you know, I want to recognize like what strength and courage that takes to even just, you know, be so open with the fact that, you know, you have gone through something so profound like that. Mm-hmm. So thank you for sharing that. That's like, I feel special that you shared it with me, and thank you. And you know, people like you that are in the work that have experienced that, like that's why it's, you know, mental health is taking such a, it's taking a better turn. It needs people with lived experience. Like how else, you know, I wouldn't want to speak to anyone that hadn't experienced something that, you know, around, especially around something like suicide. Right.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, I think, you know, to answer your question, like, how do I deal with those friends that, or those family members even that have fallen off? And I'm like you, I don't have a lot of friends at this time in my life. A lot of my friends, I'd say, are like my cousins.
Yeah.
You know, I've been lucky to have a lot of cousins that are like around the same age. And I think, I think it's just, I've chosen also, I think, to make my circle smaller. And I feel like you're probably the same, that especially when my dad passed away two years ago, very suddenly, I was extremely close to him. And, you know, kind of something like that, where it was like, yeah, I was contemplating suicide many times, because he was, you know, it's hard to talk about it, but he's my everything, you know, and that happened so suddenly. And it was just like this big punch in the face of like, oh, you think you have it all together? You think you're doing so well, mm-hmm. with your therapy and everything and these so-called friends. And then all of a sudden that happened. And I started to see people and in ways that I didn't want to see them before, because I wanted to be that person that, oh, I have all these friends and I'm doing all these cool things, right?
Right.
But my mental health really forced me to see them. And when they saw that I was going into these really dark places with my mental health, they fell off too.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really grateful for that now, because I'm like, that is what you need to see. You know, you do, there is a way that life is going to filter out those people that are not your people again, mm-hmm. right? And it's not to say, again, that they're bad people. It's just that they're not supposed to be on this journey with you.
Right.
I'm supposed to be on this journey with people like you, you know, mm-hmm. that are my people, that have experienced things like me. So I'm really grateful for those things to happen. I'm not grateful for losing my father and experiencing, you know, such darkness. But if it wasn't for that darkness, I wouldn't have seen them for who they really are, which is not my people.
Right. It's almost like you you gain knowledge from bad things happening sometimes, right? I know for me, I find that losing friends, you know, was a negative thing. And then when I started my relationship with my current partner, I was worried because we're always hanging out with my partner's friends, and I didn't have anybody to be like, okay, let's go hang out with my friends. And I thought, you know, people were going to judge me based on that, because, you know, I get judged based on a lot of things. But it's really nice how you've able to flip it and make it look like, okay, well, they're just not the ones that are supposed to be with me on this journey. Maybe you'll meet again one day and be friends. But, you know, we all go different ways. We all go in different paths. And, you know, I'm so sorry to hear about your father. That would be very difficult to have to live through. And it sounds like he was a good support for you.
Yeah, he was, you know, he battled with alcohol addiction like our entire life, but he was really trying in my adult years. And so that's what really sucks, is like just when he was becoming like, you know, my friend, really, because I felt, I was like, my father was never supposed to get married. He was supposed to be a bachelor. He was an artist. You know, he was supposed to be a director in Bollywood somewhere and just be like, you know, just one of those artistic people, which is like where I get it from too, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then as when you get older, you understand and you see them in a different light, that, you know, they also had traumatic childhoods and they were just doing the best that they could with immigration, language barriers, like so many barriers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I'm experiencing all these barriers as a first generation born and raised in Canada, but like, what the, you know, picking up and moving to a whole different country. So it's like, with that acceptance, we became like best friends, you know? And we just have these like really cool discussions around, you know, just the meaning of life, purpose, like, mm-hmm. what it is, and mental health and everything. So yeah, when I lost him, it was really, really, really huge. And he would always say these things to me, you know, about just seeing yourself for, you know, like, again, like just being kind to yourself and putting yourself first. And he would just always say, like, I never put myself first, you know, I did all the things that that people told me to do. And now now as an old man, I'm finally doing those things for myself. So I guess that kind of sucks, right? When you are seeing your parent being happy and really radiating, you know, you're like, I didn't want to lose him at that point. But again, like, so many lessons from that too, you know, so much reflection and so much empathy towards addictions, really, too, right? Understanding what his struggle and what his relationship was with alcohol, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I think the fact that he was able to find, you know, his true meaning of life at the end has been really beneficial for you, because you got to see that things can get better. Right? With the skills and the knowledge that he presented you with, like, you are able to reach that mountain, right? You're able to get over it and keep going. Even though it's probably very hard to do that thinking of him. Because he was a big special part of your life. Is your mom still around?
Yeah, my mom is around, and she is interestingly stuck in India due to COVID. She went to India before COVID happened to deal with some of my father's property stuff, and so she's coming back soon. But yeah, and you know, she does really well there. She doesn't take medication, but when she goes to India, there's like a really big change in her and a big, huge shift. Mm. You know. She really copes well there with her mental illness, and she's been diagnosed with so many different. She's had like a schizophrenia diagnosis, you know, chronic depression, bipolar disorder, multiple personality disorder. I'm very confused still in my adult years, and being in this, you know, in this work, I'm still very confused. I don't think that she is just one, or I don't even know what's happening, because like I said, you know, if you're not able to be kind and empathetic to yourself and your diagnosis, like, I don't think my mom's capable of doing that at this point still. Like, kind of like, you know, my father like owned, he's like, yes, I'm an addict. Like, this is how I cope, you know, like, and I really use the harm reduction policy, like, or not policy, but like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like the way of like the having approach, a relationship with me. Yeah. Where it's like, it's not about stop drinking and I'll love you more. It's about understanding the addiction. And with my mom, it's like, I understand her illness as much as I can, but she doesn't understand it, and she doesn't want to understand it still. So it's very difficult to have a relationship, but because of mental health, you know, knowledge and the education and the experience that I have, I'm able to cope. And then my own therapy, mm-hmm. I'm able to have somewhat of a relationship and meet her where she's at. Every day is a new day. Mm-hmm. Every day is like, what's mom going to be like today on the phone? Okay. I can tell right from, you know, her text message or her, you know, before it used to be like, I just can't handle this. I don't even know. Cause I just didn't know. I didn't know. But as I learned about what all these different layers are, and I have to meet her where she's at, that's how I'm able to have a relationship. But it's really hard. Like, I'm not going to lie. I sometimes just can't answer the phone, Cass.
Right.
You know, because it puts me in a really bad place.
Right. And you have to take care of yourself.
I can't be any good to her, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm not good. And unfortunately, a lot of times she puts me in a very dark place, you know?
Yeah, you've kind of answered the next question. I was going to say, so what is it like being in a family with, you know, an individual with mental illness, and a father with alcoholism, and then I don't know about your other siblings, but then you also have mental illness as well. How was that like growing up? Like, because it kind of sounds like you have to take care, almost had to take care of your parents, and yourself kind of just fell while doing that.
I think, you know, I don't like to talk about my siblings much. One of my siblings has a severe mental illness, and we're going through a lot of difficulties with her and trying to help her. And every day it's something new. Every day it's something different. So myself and my other sibling, who is just basically at the same level as I am, you know, we're functioning, mm-hmm. With our diagnosis. We've accepted our diagnosis as much as, you know, we've been able to. I think she's just, my other sibling's just not in a place where she's able to, right? But we found somehow that we were able to, right? So, we're trying to navigate that. And also my mom. And it's hard. Like I feel like I would I want to be like part of the supporters group at CMHA, yet to, you know, register for that. But again, like I have to have really strict boundaries around both her and my mom. My sibling is not in a place where she can speak to me. Since my father passed, she had she took like a deeper dive into, you know, some of the already high level struggles that she was dealing with her mental health. And we've been trying to help her, but it became really, really bad at that point for her. Mm-hmm. And she hasn't come out of it yet. So, you know, like I said, every day is a new day and a new challenge with her and my mom. So we're just, we're taking it day by day and sending them love and prayers, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I asked that only because in my family, you know, I'm one of the only people with mental illness or a diagnosed mental illness, or one that someone has talked about, right? It might be there and they just haven't talked about it. I know my uncle on my mom's side, he has struggled with mental illness as well. But he lives in like Newfoundland, I think. So it's not like we've ever really grew up with each other. So, being in a family of people that didn't understand mental health was very difficult. Like I think it burdened me a lot. I had to keep it as a secret for as long as I could, and then when they found out, it was a lot of, you know, a lot of the fact that they didn't believe me, they didn't believe what I had to say, they thought I was attention seeking, right? And you know, I think a lot of that has to do with the stigma in today's world that we still have with mental illness, especially borderline, because I'm diagnosed with borderline, and there's a huge stigma around it. So I often wonder what it's like to be in a family with people that, you know, have similar experiences. But it sounds like when you talk about it, it might even be like a lot harder. It might be similar, it might be harder. Because you've not only had to take on the role of helping yourself, but you've kind of, in a way, taken on a role of a guardian. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I actually was my sister's guardian, the one sibling who's diagnosed and is struggling quite a bit. I was her guardian, like at a very young age. I was forced to be her guardian because my mother had a breakdown and took off to India for like 3 years.
Wow, okay.
So that was an interesting time. And that's when she really, I could see what was happening with her. And I was really young myself. So I don't even think I had the tools, right? Mm-hmm. Like I didn't have the tools, but you know, going back to what you said, like harder, I don't know if it's harder, you know, every time I hear someone's, experience with mental health, just basic level, I feel like how isolating that could be to experience it by yourself. Whereas, like, I feel like, yes, it's, I have taken on these roles, but thank you for, like, saying that and recognizing that, because it makes me feel a little bit, like, heard, you know, of, like, the struggles that I've had. But I've been lucky enough to have my other sibling who's had similar experiences, mm-hmm. with her mental health to lean on, you know? And we can really, like, go back and forth off of each other and be like, this is what's working for me. Why don't you try this? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I feel like on one hand, yeah, and, like, we're able to, like, you know, talk about our mom and, like, our other sibling and be like, okay, let's do this. What's happening with you? And a lot of the times she's experiencing the same things, right? I'm taking on more of a caretaker role where she gets into this, she tends to, you know, go into like, I got to put up my boundaries because she has kids, right?
Okay.
So her priority is like, I got my children, like, I got to function, you know? Mm. So it kind of falls on me. But, you know, so my point is, you know, it's very isolating to be by yourself, whereas I feel like I've had her to lean on, and we've been able to, like, navigate, like, my father's funeral. It's not even, you know, like, that me and my one sibling were able to cope together,
right?
You know, because the other one, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it was like, if I didn't have her, I don't even know, you know, it's very challenging to think about what life would have been like without her.
Yeah, I mean, and the good thing is that you did have her, and hopefully you will continue to have her, you know, as you grow.
But yeah, isolating, and, you know, I was just going to say, it's everyone's experience is different, Cass. Like, yours makes me so, like, wow, that's extremely difficult to be by yourself and try to make people understand, you know? Mm-hmm.
And I struggled a lot when it came to resources and being in the community because, again, nobody really believed what I had to say. And it wasn't really till I found self-help. I actually found self-help at a young age, probably around 14, and they don't see people that young. So I ended up coming back years later, and I found that I felt comfortable because people there were dealing with mental illness like I was. When I went home, I didn't have the same feeling, and I lived with my parents for quite a long time because, you know, being on ODSP, you don't make enough money to really move and live on your own. So, you know, I'm thankful that I have this job now, but so I just want to what are some of the things that, you know, I know dancing was a big part of your life, but what else do you use now with yoga to keep yourself going every day, to keep growing, to stay safe?
Yeah, as I take a deep breath, I'm like, really, it's become, yeah, yoga, meditation, yoga not so much since the pandemic, to be honest. It's been really hard to not be in a community, like in a class with mm-hmm. other folks to share that energy with, which I really feed off of. But just really, like, those long walks in nature with my dog, with Toby, and you know, speaking to friends and spending as much time as I can with these COVID restrictions that we have, like, as much as I can to just get that human connection. I really need that for me to feel well. And then, you know, weekly therapy, staying on top of my sessions, calling, you know, the crisis line if I don't feel like calling friends or family members, you know, just realizing, like, I do have that for me. I don't always have to, I just, you know, I'm just not there anymore. I just mm-hmm. want to, like, help myself with other tools. But they're great, right? Like, family's great. And I don't want to say my friends aren't great. I'm just saying, like, I've found it to be helpful, right?
It's
just different because it's like you can call a crisis line and just be like, I'm just not having a good day. Like, just talk to me.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, it's saying that when I can reach out for a crisis line when I'm in crisis, and it could be like a crisis doesn't have to be, you know, an incredible major crisis. It could just be I'm having a really shit day and someone said something to me that super triggered something in my childhood or something, you know, that's making me feel not worthy and ugly and awful and all, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, you could just,
sure.
like, you just spiral from, like, one thing that mm-hmm. someone says to you at a store or, like, whatever. And I'm like, I don't always want to call my friends and family because I have tools now through therapy. And that's why therapy is so important, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's important to educate yourself about what your diagnosis is, that, you know, okay, you've been triggered. Like, let's sit, you know, meditation has taught me to, like, see my thoughts, you know, and be like, what exactly is happening right now? And that's not easy when
no.
you're in crisis, right?
No.
But I just find, like, calling a crisis line so much more helpful most days than to, like, be like, okay, which cousin do I call? Okay, but they have kids and she must be doing this. Like, it just takes the pressure off.
Right.
And I think that's why it's so incredibly important to have crisis lines.
Oh, it is, for sure.
People will just keep, you know, being like, no, I'm not important. I shouldn't call. And you just suppress. And that's the worst thing you can do for your mental health. Mm-hmm. That's why these services are here. Let's utilize them. So I utilize them and they're great. I'm not afraid to say it, you know, it's needed. It's part of my coping tools. So again, yoga, meditation, long walks, you know, calling friends and family or seeing them as much as I can, calling a crisis line, staying on top of my therapy, and just, you know, journaling a lot to like recognize what am I grateful for today, you know? I'm grateful for waking up, but I also had a really shitty day. I'm not going to be toxically positive either. Right. Like toxic positivity is something I just can't handle. Like, oh, everything's just great. Let's just be so thankful. It's like, okay, I can be thankful, but I also have to recognize that it's toxic to not understand that I'm having a shit day, mm-hmm. you know? So that yogi in me is really out to, you know, drill that into people's heads, because I feel like social media and all these other things is just it's been really like, just let it go, girl, just let it go. And it's like, girl, you can't always let it go. You need a therapist to need to call, you know.
That's so true. That is
like,
so true.
Just let yourself feel. And I feel like we're kind of in this stage in life where people are just like, just don't feel, just don't feel, just like think positive. And it's like, that's toxic. And
yeah, I'm not. Where they often say like, oh, you know, just think positive and everything will change. Like, or just believe that in the positivity and everything will change. And the reality is no, maybe I'm just having a bad day and I need to actually feel these emotions. Because if I don't, I will never get to that point where I can think positively and actually believe it.
Yeah. Like, just, hi, have you educated yourself? Because I have anxiety and depression, and I can't just think positive. Because my actual brain and the chemicals in my brain and the neural pathways,
yeah.
they're going down a very dark road. And I can't just turn that shit off,
nope.
right? So that kind of stuff, like, yeah, just pray it away. Or just, like, you know, go outside and just let it. Like, yeah, going outside helps. But, like, some days it really just doesn't help. Mm-hmm. Some days I just want to, I just need to cry all day.
Mm-hmm. And you know what, I think a lot of this is, you know, society's view and what we see on TV and everything, it really affects people. Like, they don't realize that, you know, we need to feel these emotions. We need to have a bad day if we're having a bad day. And it's okay. It is totally okay to have those days. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't believe that, right? They think you're just sitting in your sickness. Well, you know.
And I think going back to the friends conversation, which I've been reflecting on a lot lately, I think that's what really hit me hard when my dad passed away. It was just like, I wasn't that, you know, high energy girl that was, you know, I was an event planner at TIFF at the time, at the Toronto Film Festival. And I just walked away from everything. Like, I just can't. And these friends, these so-called friends that just wanted the shiny Iman to, you know, get into parties and whatever, mm-hmm. right? She just was like, no, like, I'm just not feeling good, you know? But yeah, like, that's what I mean by, like, just recognizing mm-hmm. your accepting your darkness. After the darkness will come the light, but, like, accept that there is going to be darkness in life.
Yeah. And there will be for everybody, right?
For everybody. Yep.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a little bit of a deep dive into some more some more interesting topics here. I'm curious. You know, with the whole, like, Black Lives Matter going on and you know, a lot of you know, people with mental illnesses getting treated differently depending on the color of their skin or their race or their background. And you know, I don't know what your background is, if you're willing to share it, that's fine. But I wonder if you find that, your background kind of puts you in a place with less opportunities to get help, to get resources. Maybe there's more stigma around your mental illness in the community that you've grown up in.
Yeah, I thank you for asking that question, because that's a very important topic that I'm trying to tackle by, so yeah, my background, I'm South Asian, so I'm from India. My parents are from India. I was born and raised here in Canada, but I'm very, like, I identify mostly really as, like, a South Asian woman.
Right.
My parents are from Punjab, and I speak Hindi, Punjabi, and Urdu, three languages, because I actually went to school there for 3 years and studied classical Indian dance when I was younger.
Oh, awesome.
when my mom left us there for a few years. But yeah, like as far as the community, like huge problems, right? Like I can say as immigrants, and just the not even having the word for mental health is where it started for me. Like there's such derogatory terms that are used for people that are different. And that could only be because of their mental health, as I learned when I got older, that they were whispering and making comments or making fun of my mom and not speaking to her and inviting her to things because of her mental health. But the words that they were using were so awful and scary that they're used in like films, for example, for like, you know, the scary guy. Those are the words that are used in my language. So there's no word for mental health. So let's start there. You know, didn't even have the word. Wow. So then on top of that, you know, just the further isolation of like a lot of South Asian families, they come here and they do really well. Like they're doctors, they're engineers, you know, education is super, super important. Like any Asian culture, I feel like very similar, you know, study. And my parents both just, they weren't able to cope with the whole immigration process. My father couldn't find a good job. My mom had her mental illness. So, you know, it just kept getting worse after she would have more children because postpartum would come in. So, wow, like so many layers, right? And then on top of that, the community layer. So accessing help for her, I don't even think she had any like, you know, idea of like, first, let me even try to describe like with words.
Right.
And then, like, you know, community isolation, people stop talking to them, you know, whispering, whatever, at church. So they stop going to those community events or places where now people are saying you can go and find help. We didn't, right? Mm-hmm. So as I got older, I think I'm going to say it's very difficult right now. Yes, still. And that's why I'm doing the work by sitting on a board of a new South Asian mental health organization. So that I can affect change from the inside. So I'm working with Soch, mental health. Soch means like to think in Punjabi. And they're just two South Asian women that came together and started this little grassroots organization, and they're doing all this work in the community. So I'm sitting on the board to try and affect some change. But like, yeah, like honestly, Cass, it's just like even my mental health, right? Like being born and raised here and having English as my first language, really, right? I didn't know when I had my breakdown where I could turn. And when I did turn to a lot of white therapists, and I still have a white therapist and she's amazing and she totally gets me. But like it's been a struggle. Mm-hmm. It's been a struggle to find someone who's not from my culture to understand my culture and to help me in the way that I need the help. Could it be better with a South Asian therapist? 100 times better, I think, right? Not to say my therapists haven't done well, but just that cultural connection just would have been so much more helpful. And with whole Black Lives Matters, like you're saying, you know, people of color are also really resonating with everything that is coming to the forefront and things that that community, the Black community, is dealing with. Like, I can't say in any comparison that my community, there's no comparison to what the Black community is experiencing and has been experiencing historically. The South Asian community has been seen as a very privileged and put on a very privileged platform, you know, like I said, highly educated. So there's no comparison there. Like, no, I have not experienced stigma like the Black community. Like, I have been welcomed into a lot of places and spaces. It hasn't been that for me at all. It's just more in accessing services, and I'd say like I've experienced a lot of I have experiences. It's even hard to like be like with racism. It's just, I don't know what it is, but like you're just like, as a Canadian, you're like, yeah, kind of, but, and it's like, no, I've experienced racism on a very high level, you know, when it comes to like job opportunities. You know, I've been overseen for indifferent you know, nepotism or color, whatever it has come at play, I've experienced it very much so. But you know, it's something that I think we're trying to claim and understand more in the South Asian community. But I'm at the point where I want to highlight the struggles of the Black community and the Indigenous community before, you know, like I can make the changes in my community. I think I have so many resources that I really want to tap into those communities and help those as well, you know?
For sure.
I hope that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. And
yeah, like historically and systemically, my community has not experienced anything close to what the Black community and the Indigenous community has experienced. So for me to make some change in my community, I think I need to bring that understanding of how those communities have experienced struggle into my own community.
Right.
You know, I need to bring that conversation in and then have them, you know, do some work within our own community and how we treat each other so that we can be better humans to the communities that need it most. Mm-hmm. It's just like what we're doing in mental health, right? It's like I gotta be able to like see everybody from a human lens and see myself as a be empathetic to myself first, but seeing their struggles and giving them the platform to have their voices heard. I think, you know, that's what we've been doing at Soch Mental Health. That's what we've been doing at CMHA, right? Amplifying those voices as much as we can. Yeah.
Thank you for saying that. So just before we end here, so I can run off to class, do you have any, you know, I don't like to use the word advice, but do you have any, you know, things to say you would like to say to people that are, you know, maybe in your community or maybe, you know, in the world in general, people around you that are suffering and they don't know where to turn. They don't know what to do. They can't accept themselves or they feel like they can't accept themselves. What are some things that you'd like to say to them?
Wow. Yeah. It's so interesting because, you know, the work that we do at CMHA and then the work that I do as a mental health advocate outside in the community in my own personal time, I think, you know, that's the message, like what you just said. You know, I try to put that message out there as much as I can in a very organic way, mm-hmm. you know, to not be like, you know, so like in your face about like, you know, if you have a mental illness, call this number. It's like finding other ways, I think, are the way to pull people in who are struggling mm-hmm. because of the stigma, right? So, you know, not everybody's going to call a helpline because they feel they are stigmatizing themselves first. And they need to understand that that's what's happening first, right?
Right.
The first step in getting help is like, oh, shit, I'm stigmatizing myself, you know? Oh shit, the people around me are stigmatizing me too, or not, right?
Right.
I don't know. But like understanding what's going on inside, understanding what's going on around, and then reaching out for help. But I try to be like that organic, you know, way of reaching out through social media and through other platforms in the community, you know, through yoga, through meditation, to be like, here's my yoga retreats that are, you know, from a mental health trauma focused lens.
Mm-hmm.
From an inner child healing lens and bring my work to that practice in an organic way so that people aren't like, you know, hi, I'm Iman, I have a mental illness and I need to call, like, it's not so, do you know what I mean? It's
yeah.
just like, I'm just trying to find ways for people to come and ask for help or direct them to different resources where they can call anonymously and not feel, like they're, you know, put on like in like everything's just not like out there for everybody mm-hmm. to see so much. And there's ways to do that, right? There's ways. You can call a crisis line anonymously.
Yeah.
You can, you know, join a yoga meditation group, right? That is coming from a trauma focused lens. There's so many out there. I'm not the only one. There's so many. I hope my computer doesn't die because it's as well. So, but yeah, that's, I'd say, like, to answer your question, like, just the mental health advocacy that I'm doing in the community, I think is my way of reaching out. And I'm hoping that folks that are in need of help can find those organic ways to reach out, you know, or find ways that they can reach out for anonymous help if they're not fully ready to, like, you know, access services. And there's so many right now that it's like, just take that first step, you know, take that first step in, like, accepting who you are and what you're going through, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that, maybe it's something that you're going to live with forever, but it's not always going to be this hard, right? Like, I think me and you can both say, like, we have good days, we have bad days, but
yeah.
knowing what I have, knowing what I'm carrying, it helps me on those dark days so much. So just educate yourself.
Yeah, that beautifully said. So thanks so much for coming on the podcast today. I think we have, you know, I feel like we have a lot more to talk about. So maybe I'll have you back one of these weeks and we'll talk again. So thanks for coming on. And, you know, to everyone out there, just keep talking, because the more you talk about it, the easier it will be for those people that are having a tough time getting out. So, thank you.
Thank you.